Business transformations take courage, commitment, and a long-term point of view.
For a company that had been relatively stable, we had to take a pause and step back and say, okay, who we are today, does that fit who we need to be tomorrow? And is it time for us to potentially disrupt ourselves beyond a cost out activity?
That's Jen Hewlett, Vice President of People for Ericsson North America. Following a downturn in 2016, the Ericsson team knew it needed a change. With a groundswell of support and momentum from employees, Jen embarked on a transformation strategy to reposition the company for long-term success. At the heart of the transformation was culture, identifying the desired team behaviors, learning how to practice those behaviors, and also reinforce them. As Jen led this transformation journey for Ericsson, she was also embarking on her own personal transformation, which has unleashed incredible energy for her that's fueling momentum across her entire team.
When you can show people who you really are, bring them along on the journey with you, then you can really be a motivational and inspirational leader.
I'm Merrill McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Jen Hewlett. I'm here with Jen Hewlett, Vice President of People for Ericsson North America. Jen, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Merrill.
You know, it's incredible. You've just hit the four-year mark with Ericsson. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been the fastest 4 years of my life, I'll tell you.
Oh, wow. And why is that?
Well, you know, it's just at a couple of milestones personally. My kids are growing up fast. It's been a really busy time for me. And, you know, I think as you get older, time just moves faster.
Yeah, that's for sure. What took you to Ericsson?
You know, when I joined Ericsson, I had just finished working for GE, and I was with GE for about 13 years, really from the start of my career. I think I was 22 when I joined GE. And for me, it was a fantastic training ground. Great opportunity to really hone my practice and learn what it means to be a great HR leader. But it also felt like I was at that point in my career where I was ready for that next challenge. And I wanted to be able to spread my wings and do something different and kind of exercise that change muscle and challenge myself to say, could I really be successful in an environment where I was back to learning, I was back to being uncomfortable, I was back to being into a different industry. So that's why I made the decision to leave GE and, of course, then found this role at Ericsson. And it was such a different company in so many ways and similar in so many ways. You know, it's a Swedish company, so really different culture, different leadership style. And for me, it just felt like the right fit. It felt like the right next step in my career.
Tell me a little bit about the culture. What is different between Ericsson and GE?
Well, GE, of course, a U.S. company, so it's very, very direct, almost to the point where, you know, it was overly direct. Expectations are really high. Accountability is really high. We would move very fast in GE. Change was an easier thing, I think, in GE. It was just kind of expected that you would make these big shifts. Ericsson's a Swedish company, and so there's a whole different style that's required there. There's much more collaboration. It's a very warm company. It's a company based, you know, not necessarily just on outcomes, but also on relationships and how you develop relationships and how good you are at honing and forming those relationships. So it, you know, has helped me build out a new skill set.
Yeah, I'd love to talk a little bit more about that because I know many people who've been at GE and go to another culture talk about the shock of being in an environment where you can't just tell people what to do and everyone does it.
You know, I just remember this phenomenon of a couple of months in and maybe even my first year in, we would be on my global HR leadership team. And what I thought would be, we would come to a decision to do something. And then I'd get off the phone and start executing on that thing only then to get back on the next call and really realize that, no, that was just the first part of the discussion, or that was just the first point where we would start the discussion. So that piece to me was something new. And the whole idea that just because it's a good idea, or just because your leader says you're going to do it, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get everybody on board and that it's going to be effective. So that all that time that it takes to really build consensus and collaborate and bring people along, which is such an important skill set to have as a leader, was a big learning for me.
So how did you go about developing that skill and like learning how to enlist people?
Yeah, I mean, trial and error sometimes. Sometimes you stumble and sometimes you realize you're off and running and then, you know, you're a mile down the road and you look behind you and there's no one. So, you know, learning the hard way. When I first joined, of course, I was nervous about the challenge because it was so different. And so I tried to spend a lot of time up front just talking with people, trying to understand who they were, what motivated them, their backgrounds, how things work. Ericsson's a super warm company. And so I had a lot of people who were willing to spend that time with me and sit down and explain ways of working. And then also through those relationships and the formation of those relationships, I had people who were willing to tell me when I had gotten off track, because I made myself open for that feedback. I needed that feedback. It was a bit of a different world at the beginning for me.
You know, that's always an interesting thing too, is really learning how to encourage people to give you feedback, right? Because so many people are concerned about being really direct.
Yeah, not everybody responds well to direct feedback. Not everyone can hear direct feedback. And really, you know, if you're going to take the time to give somebody feedback, and then you don't take the time to do it in a way that they can hear and they will respond, then it's almost a useless action. So creating the feedback, developing that message is almost as important as developing the how are you going to go about doing it? How are you going to deliver it? How do they want to hear and receive feedback? That was a big aha for me. And the other piece too is, you know, I'm the kind of person who I need feedback to be delivered direct to me. It's confusing to me when it's wrapped up and very pretty and flowery. I spend a lot of cycles trying to decipher what was said. And so it's a bit of a relief to me if you could just be direct. And I had to explain that a lot to the people that I was working with and get them comfortable with, like, no, just tell me what you're really trying to say.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it too, of just making sure that you're having the conversations that you both understand what's expected on both ends.
Yeah.
And I know this was all in the context of the company going through a massive transformation. Is that right?
It is. I joined at the perfect time, really, in August of 2015. And then in 2016, we had a major downturn. And as an organization, we're going through some extremely difficult times. We missed financial targets. We had really big leadership changes at our executive team level. And then, of course, at the region leadership team level. And I am that head of North America market. So our whole leadership team, there was a lot of changes there. And we were going through cost out and product rationalization and reformation of our strategy. So it was one of those times where for a company that had been relatively stable in a very disruptive market, we were now ourselves being disrupted and had to take a pause and step back and say, okay, who we are today, is does that fit who we need to be tomorrow? And, you know, is it time for us to potentially disrupt ourselves beyond a cost out activity, but really think about who do we need to be going forward? And then how do we actually make that happen?
And how did you go about that? It sounds like you were really revisiting what your purpose is in terms of really thinking about it as a transformation purpose versus just codifying who you'd been.
Yeah, we were. We absolutely were. I think there was a recognition, and this came from, of course, the leadership team, but also really deeply from our employees, that the things that we were doing, what we were known for, wasn't really working anymore. Those clothes didn't fit anymore. So the first step for us in just kind of really understanding who we were and who we needed to be came from us talking with our employees. We got a feedback through our engagement survey, things like that. But we also did something, of course, we're a technology company. So we did something that, you know, is very technology company-ish, which is we had a culture hack. So we asked our employees, really three questions. We asked them, what makes you proud to work for Ericsson? What frustrates you about Ericsson? And then why does the world still need us? We had thousands of employees, you know, contributing to this dialogue that lasted a couple of days. What we found out of that was really some key things. We weren't simple. We were overly bureaucratic. We were overly focused on process and not on people. That kind of being enamored with process and the complexity of doing business internally took us away from the customer focus that had been a source of pride for us for so long. And we really had felt like we had strayed from that path. And so what we heard from our employees was, it's time to change. They were frustrated. They were in some ways despairing. You know, at the time we had really low attrition and our employees are super engaged and really committed. They're proud to work for Ericsson. We have high tenure in the company. And yet we were going through all this disruption and all of this downturn. And I think that was that spark for us and for our employees, a realization and an understanding that something's got to change. And what we came up with was that our ways of working had to change, that the behaviors that we had had before weren't going to be the behaviors that were going to get us where we actually needed to go.
And can you remember when you first gathered all that information and insight? How did you feel?
Well, so for me, I think it was an interesting process because I was still at that point where I could be a little bit clinical. You know, I wasn't so entrenched in the company that it was part of me and it had been part of me for 15 or 20 years before. So for me, I could kind of stand back and look at it from an academic sense and really understand where we needed to go. But that sometimes put me at a disadvantage because most of the people that I was working with, most of the people on my leadership team, as an example, had been with the company for a very long time. And so you had the whole spectrum of people who were really proud of who we were and where we had come from and the ways of working that we had. And you had the spectrum of people who were embracing and ready for the change. And so having to bring everybody along on the journey and meet them at the different points where they were was initially the first part of the challenge.
Yeah, I would think that there'd just be some sense of, wow, like what the company really needs is what we really know how to do and we can get on this and lead it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a new leader at the time. And so that really helped to just spark this and get it moving. He was a peer of mine who had gotten promoted and then came back as the market area leader. He was probably one of the early people who said, yes, we need to make a change. And then he went up to global and took a new role. He came back again with the fresh eyes and really motivated to change. And then we have some customers in our industry who were fantastic at change and culture transformation and using culture as a competitive advantage. I think that was the other piece for my company is it's an engineering company and it's a company that is proud of its products. And that's the kind of stuff that matters and gives us a competitive advantage. But the reality is it's that plus who we are as an organization. It's that plus our culture that gives us that competitive advantage. So actually spending time with our employees and with our leaders, trying to bridge that gap and get that recognition that culture can be a competitive advantage. And our culture right now is holding us back. We need to make a change. And then using some of our customers who had gone through the journey before us ended up being pretty powerful.
What were some of the changes you needed to make?
Yeah, I mean, I talked a little bit about the fact that we were complex. You know, we had systems, process, tools that were out of date that really didn't serve us any longer. We actually came up with a model, and it was a model of 12 behaviors that were our wanted behaviors. And I think of it in terms of if you do any work on culture change and digital transformation is all about behaviors. It's all about people, not necessarily technology. So if you do the work and you look at what are those behaviors that show up in digital transformation, it's agility, it's simplification, it's transparency, it's innovation. Those are just four of those 12 behaviors that we had captured in our model. And so we were really between two worlds, this analog way of working where control was at the top. It was about hierarchy. It was about process and governance to shifting into a much more agile way of working, a much more digital way of working. And so we defined what those behaviors were and then shared with our employees how we thought we needed to get there.
And at the time, as a leader, was there anything you were really concerned about in terms of how you could get people there?
For me, it was less about me as a leader and more about me as the, and I don't mean it this way, as the leader of the effort. Because, you know, here I was relatively new to the company, recognizing that we needed to make a culture shift with my leadership team behind me, for sure. But also feeling like, of course, I had to be the expert, right? I had to be the leader of this initiative and make it successful. And I hadn't done anything at scale like this before. So the idea of how do you get 15,000 people, which at the time was the size of our market area, on the same page and really understanding what change meant, what change looked like, what the new ways of working looked like. That to me was a bit daunting and intimidating, actually.
So how did you start?
We started by making sure that we had everybody from a leadership team on board, that we really understood that this needed to happen. So anchoring it with our leadership team. And so I spent a lot of time with the leadership team talking about what does change mean and what does it look like. We said we didn't want an initiative, we wanted a movement. And what does a movement mean? Well, of course, leaders are role models in a movement, but it doesn't just come from leaders, it comes from employees. And so that shifts how you approach the whole effort because it becomes a very grassroots thing. So for us to start, you know, we had to think about, okay, so what are the tactics that we're going to employ? But really, it couldn't be something that we just solely controlled as leaders as a push-down effort. And then we set up a cross-functional team that had influencers and significant leaders throughout our organization in some of the areas, particularly where we had most of our people or we had people that we knew may be more difficult to shift over the line. And we focused on three things. One was just awareness and motivation to change. So how do we make people aware of where we were, but where we needed to go and aware of these 12 behaviors? And how do we motivate people? How do we tell them why it's important to actually be different today or tomorrow than we are today? We focused on ability and know-how. So just because we say we want people to be more accountable doesn't necessarily mean that people know how to do that in practice. So we spent some time educating them on, in practice, what does it mean to make sure that they have the tools and the skills. And that for us was a big investment for our employees from a learning standpoint. And then the biggest thing that we did that we're still doing because it's such a big body of work is reinforcement. And this to me was, I think, maybe one of the most powerful ahas in the whole movement was, okay, so we've gone through all the hard work of defining what we want to look like in the future down to the behavioral level. But then when we go look at the way that we're actually working, so take the HR space as an example and the employee journey. When you map out those moments that matter in an employee's life, and you ask yourself whether or not you're behaving that way, the way of the wanted behaviors in those moments that matter, that's the real test. Are you reinforcing the culture through some of these key moments? So key moments like when a person gets promoted, when a person gets hired, when a person goes out to do a requisition to hire someone for themselves. And what we found when we really mapped out that employee journey and we stood back and said, how does that fit with the culture we wanted to create? There was a big disconnect. We wanted to be agile. We wanted to be simple. We wanted to be people focused. And we found that for the most part, we weren't any of those things when we were really mapping out and thinking about how we operated in the employee journey. So we had to spend some time picking areas where we were going to invest to say, okay, so as you're going through the hiring process, how do we inject that wanted state? How do we inject that culture piece throughout the hiring process, throughout the promotional process and the assessment process? That's work that we're still doing. And that's work that actually has bloomed into a kind of a whole employee experience body of work that Global Ericsson is taking on.
So Jen, you said you boldly claimed that you wanted a movement. How did you describe what you were looking for?
Yeah, I mean, so putting that out there as a goal was really bold, right? And just me, again, as a leader leading this effort and going through this, it felt bold. Like, are we really going to be able to do this? One of the things, I had a woman on my team, and she said, you know, one of the things that's going to be really important for us is that we said this needs to be a movement. It's got to be very people-centered. And so one of the things that she did was she created a group of influencers. So I think it was about 25 people throughout our organization that really was representative of different units in our organization, who they were not necessarily managers or leaders, but they were influencers within their own organizations, people that other people followed for different reasons. And we brought them together, and they really, for us, served almost as an advisory board. So as we were pulling together tactics and how were we going to create awareness and motivation, they were a sounding board for us to be able to bounce ideas off of. And it's funny, it was such an aha for me, because you read about, okay, here's how we're going to do it. And you put it down on paper and you've got this project plan. And then, you know, you kind of take it to people who are really doing the work or who are really in the organization. And they say, this doesn't make any sense at all. And it causes you to kind of step back and question, okay, all right, now we start over and try something new. But those influencers for us were really powerful. They shaped a lot of the work that we did. They ended up, quite honestly, to be the creative force behind the movement. And that creative force was the thing that kind of helped scoop up people and bring them along with us. So as an example, they were adamant that we needed an actual, like a kickoff event, like a today is the day where we start the culture journey. And we had been communicating with our employees for months and almost in a soft launch way, talking with them about the change that needed to happen and why culture was a competitive advantage. They said, no, we need something very splashy. And they came up with a tagline. It was hashtag Erickson Awesome. And that tagline, I think the last time I checked, which was probably in August, had like 9 million social media impressions, right? It was something that they threw out there. The whole movement then became branded as Erickson Awesome. And that was the thing that caught people's attention, because 12 behaviors is a lot to remember, but that caught people's attention. So this big splashy event that we ended up having, we had these site celebrations a year ago, August, where everybody came and we had this amazing all employee meeting. And it gave us an opportunity to just really be transparent and open with our people and talk about the shift that needed to happen. One of the things that we did was we brought two of those influencers into that all-employee meeting, and they told their story. And it was so powerful, Meryl. They told their story. One of them told a story about how he loved the company and he had been the company for 9 years. But right, probably 2 months before he had been asked to join this effort, the influencers effort, he was entertaining external offers. And he talked about the despair that he felt and the disappointment in the company, because he knew it needed to change, but he didn't have faith that we would change. And then he joined this movement, and that to him sparked him and it re-energized him, and he was a believer again. And that was really powerful for us. So that event and what they brought to our effort, to me, is the thing that really made it a movement instead of an initiative.
And that's a really powerful story. When you talked about boldly declaring you wanted a movement, how did you define what a movement was?
We defined a movement in the sense that it's not an initiative. It's not leader-led. The leaders are there. They're guiding. They're absolutely role modeling. But it's not a push-down activity. It's a push-up activity. We had to get out of the way sometimes of our employees and empower them and step back. And sometimes as a leader or as a leadership team, that can be a little bit uncomfortable. We had to try new things. We had to talk more openly about failure. So the movement piece was really about breaking down the hierarchy, breaking down this concept that we would lead and push things down and then all would be good. It was really more about the groundswell. This is employee driven and it's people centric.
And as I recall, as you went through all of this, you were going on your own personal change journey. Tell me about that.
So when I joined Erickson, this was a big step up role for me. It was much more complex than what I was doing at GE. And so it stretched me. It was obviously a different culture and a different company and a different industry. So that was new as well. We relocated. So I had that going on. I had little kids who went from being really little kids to, you know, kind of grown up little kids. You know, I have a son who just started middle school, actually, which is a big change for us. And I was also at that milestone time in my life where I was getting ready to turn 40. And when you get ready to turn 40, at least in my own experience, when you meet these milestones, cause you to kind of step back and reflect. So it was a point of reflection for me because I had taken on so much change personally. And in some of that change, I was successful and things went well. And then in some of that change, I was really challenged and I would have done things differently. Part of what I would have done differently, I also had gotten some feedback from my team who was instrumental in driving this change journey. But as we ended it, as we got ready to kind of wrap up the project to some extent, or the big, you know, bulk of the work, I looked around and my team was weary and a little bit battered and bruised. And unfortunately, some of that was my doing. It was my doing because we were really overcommitted. And it was my doing because, of course, I felt the pressure of running this big project. And that pressure went and flowed down to my team. And so I got some tough feedback at that time about me, about my leadership style, about really kind of around four things, around the balance in the team. The team felt like things were off balance. They had too much on their plate. The tone in which I led when I was under pressure. And then also connection to me. They wanted more connection. They needed to feel more connection to me. So it was one of those times where it was so blurry. There was so much to do and so much going on personally and professionally for me that I wouldn't say I lost my way, but I would say, you know, I let myself get into some bad habits and maybe things that for me were development needs earlier in my career that I had thought I had conquered because I was under pressure and stress, kind of popped back up again in a way I didn't necessarily notice right away and didn't necessarily course correct right away.
And what is you got that feedback, what did you do with it?
Well, my first response is like fetal position. I was like, how could I have let this happen? How could we have gotten here? You know, I kind of went through all the cycles, right? I was angry at myself. I was frustrated. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. Yeah, because here I am, the HR leader of the organization, right? Who should be the role model. And just feeling like I had let my team down. And so I tried to break out of my shell a little bit more. And this is something that for me has been a really big learning. And I feel like I'm still learning every day. But prior to this point, you know, I had been an executive for 6 or 7 years. For the most part, I was usually the youngest person on the team by 10 or 20 years on the leadership team. There was oftentimes I was the only female or one of two females. And part of my coping mechanism was to somewhat compartmentalize myself, to be extremely professional at work and all about business. When in my personal life, I'm a pretty warm individual and I'm really open, I'm really transparent. But when I got to work, I felt that I had to put some kind of an armor on to do my job. And I think, again, kind of getting to that 40-year mark and having this tough feedback, I realized that there's probably work I needed to do to marry those two sides of myself, and that that work would probably benefit me at home and would benefit me at work. And so I just tried something that made me really uncomfortable. I got the feedback. I organized it in my head and came to terms with it. And then I sat down with my team and I was extremely transparent. I talked with them about how it made me feel, about how disappointed in myself I was. I talked about, you know, my journey as a professional and where I was at. And I talked about what I was going to do going forward to change my behavior, to try to meet them where they were and solve some of these issues that they brought up for me. And up until that point, I think the team just didn't know me the way that they know me now, right? Because I had held back such big pieces of myself, feeling like that was required for my position and for where I was in my life. I don't think they had really seen me nervous before, or, you know, certainly I'd been nervous, but they didn't know that I was nervous. I had several people on the team say, that was really powerful. I just never thought of you as a person who would be nervous. Like, I'm nervous every day. So just letting them know kind of what was really going on in my head and being a little bit more open and transparent. And then that allowed them to be more open and transparent with me. So again, I'm the kind of person who really wants direct feedback. And I think I showed them that, of course, I'm a human being behind all of the work and all the stuff that I do when I'm at work. And that just made me more approachable, made it easier. So embracing that authenticity and embracing, you know, kind of who I am and not worrying about saying things perfectly and focusing on showing people who I am. And that really helped, just that honest conversation. And we've had a lot of honest conversations up until this point. as a result of that. So it's been really good for my team.
That sounds like it actually had a terrific outcome. And I'm thinking about just the last 4 years, you had a massive job change, huge company transformation, your own personal shifts and insights. What would you say are the biggest lessons you've learned in all that you'd want to share with our listeners?
I would say there's two things. I would say the first thing is when you're working and when you set goals, and if you're an achievement-driven person, it's hard sometimes to not feel alone in that. You've set a goal, you want to get there. Perfection is the goal, right? But the reality is the work that we do is a team sport. And there's no such thing as perfection anymore. I mean, there's no such thing as perfection. It's really about, okay, let's try this thing. Let's see if it doesn't work. Let's course correct. Let's try this thing. Let's see if it doesn't work. And if you can really connect with people and you can really bring them along on the journey, then the work product that you get at the end of that is so much more powerful than if you're sitting in your office banging away with it all on your shoulders. And I think the second piece is this, I've actually had two roundtables this week with early career talent. And there's one of these lessons that I feel like I learned it a little bit late in life. And had I learned it in my 20s, it would have been great for me to have this knowledge, which is that there's voices in our heads that are counterproductive. And I think as women, sometimes we talk to ourselves in mean ways. We bully ourselves almost. And it gets us away from our goal. And I think now where I am in my life, I think I'm much better at deciphering where I'm wasting energy on thoughts and stopping those negative thoughts and stopping those thoughts that really don't add to my confidence but take confidence away from me. And that gives me back energy. And it stops me from, you know, those unproductive thoughts and really focuses me on what do I really need to do.
Well, it's so interesting you talk about that voice in your head, because I've had many, many people that I've interviewed talk about it, men and women. And of course, to your earlier point, when that voice is in your head, only you are hearing it and no one else around you knows that conversation.
And it's irrational. And I also think too, I mean, there are times where I will literally stop myself and say, like, if you spoke to your daughter this way, the way you speak to yourself, you'd be ashamed.
Right. We're all so hard on ourselves, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the takeaways to these roundtables I had was, you know, speak to yourself like you speak to your daughter or to your niece.
That's great advice. So, Jen, the last question I have for you, as you know, our podcast is all around let go and lead. So what is it you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think leaders most need to let go of this kind of need to control everything, this need to control who they are and their outcomes, and to kind of ring fence that. And it all has to be perfect. I mean, I don't think that that really exists. I don't think that that's real reality. It certainly doesn't motivate people. It doesn't connect people. It doesn't excite people. I think when you can show people who you really are, bring them along on the journey with you, then you can really be a motivational and inspirational leader. But that takes confidence. It takes practice. It takes sometimes making yourself vulnerable and being uncomfortable. But the product that you get in the end is so worth it.
Well, thanks, Jen. So this is Jen Hewlett, the Vice President of People for Ericsson North America. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Meryl.
I'm so inspired by Jen's personal leadership journey and what it's meant for her work at Ericsson. So I'd like to recap a few learnings from her. First, really work to embrace your own unique self and show up that way at work. This may take practice, time, and confidence, but know it will pay off in personal fulfillment for you and inspiration for your team. Second, recognize the power of your influencers. Jen's example of the Ericsson Awesome hashtag is a powerful reminder that embracing your team's ideas can launch you into spaces you never dreamed of. Third, saying you want employees to exhibit new behaviors doesn't mean they know how to do this. Invest in helping your people learn to develop and practice new behaviors so they ultimately become habit. Thanks again to Jen for her fabulous insights. If you've been enjoying Let Go and Lead, please subscribe or leave us a review. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, this is Let Go and Lead.